Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
How are you? Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937. We got room for you here as we react to a rough start to the NBA Cup, sponsored by Emirates. I know you don't like the Cup. I don't really care. I'm kind of indifferent to it. Like, it doesn't matter to me. It's just, you're right, it's a regular season game. There's this thing for the teams that aren't going to make the playoffs. That's really who it's for. It's for those teams in those markets. And fine, give them a chance to go out there. It was the Pacers won it last year, right? Like, give them a chance to go out there and accomplish something and win something. I think the Celtics have much bigger goals than that. But
did the Pacers win it or the Lakers?
I thought it was the Pacers. No, it was the Lakers. The Lakers beat the Pacers.
Yeah, they raised the banner.
Sorry, right.
Wait, yes. Who was James Earl Jones is producing today?
The
deep-voiced man in there.
Very nice.
I apologize for my voice. I woke up with something going on in my throat. I got a crap ton of hauls, so hopefully we'll be able to get through.
All right, very good.
Tangway.
It's before we even get to the takes on the NBA Cup and what we think about or how we think about it, that was an awful game last night for the Celtics. I mean, it just was not, especially towards the end there. It's becoming an issue now, them getting killed on the offensive glass. Like, this has become a thing now, and you're seeing it not once in a while. You're seeing it pretty consistently. I feel like these last five games, the Bucks got them on the glass, the Nets got them on the glass, the Warriors got them on the glass. They didn't lose all those games. But you're going to lose more games than you should if you can't rebound, and that's it. I mean, they're still one of the best teams in the league. They're still 9-3, so I'm not here to hit the panic button or anything like that, certainly not in the Eastern Conference. But it is something to keep an eye on because Kristaps Porzingis, he'll come back and he'll help that a little bit, but it's not that they're not tall enough, right? It's that they're getting outworked. They're getting outworked under the glass. They're getting outworked for loose balls. I can't tell you how many lazy passes I counted that Dyson Daniels stepped in the passing lane and took away and went down the other way for a dunk or a layup or something. That happened more times than I can remember. And in the fourth quarter still, it was ugly. It was just sort of a lackluster performance. It was the type of game that I wasn't expecting to see the Celtics cruise into at this point in the year. I thought we were going to still see motivated, kill everybody, you know, we're the Celtics and we're going to roll you over like you were kind of seeing in that Knicks game on opening night. I thought that would last a little bit longer. It seems like kind of worn off a little bit.
I was dead wrong. I thought they wanted to be special. I thought they wanted to set records. I thought that would sort of keep human nature and whatever out of the picture, and that's very much in the picture. Jaylen Brown said it. Jaylen Brown's their leader, in my opinion, and we're going to get into him, I'm sure, on a variety of areas in this game. But when he says, like, we kind of just thought we'd win and could just show up and win, that's what it looked like. That's the reality. And I think allowing offensive rebound, defensive rebounding is sort of like defense. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of effort involved there, a lot of energy, a lot of want to. And when you're having problems in that area, I think that's indicative of sort of your mentality and how you showed up to the game. And because I don't think the Hawks are better, and I don't even think it really had anything to do with, like, they were motivated to, in this tournament. I don't think it's anything to do with that. I also don't think, for those people that thought, those Olympic issues are really going to motivate the Celtics, well, they got three losses already. They already lost to the Warriors. You can stick your Olympic motivation up your bum because it has led to nothing successful right out the gates.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe Mazzulla has to call him soft. That works for the Patriots. Maybe you got to do
and they kind of are
like that. They are a little bit, yeah.
They're kind of a soft basketball team right now. I mean, so you lose rebounding-wise. Mm-hmm. I don't think your defense has been up to your own standards. You can't hit free throws in the clutch. That's sort of a mental soft issue, even though with JB it's also just a kind of par for the course for part of his makeup issue.
Yeah, it sure is.
But I think you could argue they're a soft basketball team right now. And you're right. Maybe Missoula needs to pull that out. Challenger. Remember early on when Ime said they got punked on their home floor or whatever?
It was like, I do remember that. Yeah.
I think it was like the first week he was coaching or something. Mm-hmm. They feel like they need some sort of a wake-up call. And I don't know if that comes from Missoula. Probably not going to come from Tatum. Maybe it comes from Jaylen Brown or Al Horford or the Drew Holiday, whatever you consider the leadership of this team is. But that was, they're not as good as we expected them to be. It, like, that would be my simple takeaway. They're not as good as we projected. They've already lost three games. They lost a game to a team at home. We didn't think there was any way they were going to lose to the Warriors. Mm-hmm. That, if they were going to win anything, that was the game they were going to make sure they win. Then the first game of this, you know, cockamamie tournament here, they lose to
people,
the Hawks.
People don't say cockamamie that much anymore, you know?
I almost was thinking about it, and I was thinking that, like, I haven't heard this word in so long that I feel
cockamamie,
like
cockamamie, what is this cockamamie stuff, you know? Like, you know, that's a pretty good word, and you don't hear it anymore.
And I was worried I was going to say it wrong and have to be dropped, because it feels like a word if you go sideways that Stiz would have to drop it. But, yeah, we should bring it back. Make that the official word of the WEEI afternoon program.
Sure. I'm fine with that. The Celtics did have a big lead in this game. They led by 15, I want to say, in the third quarter multiple times. So to see that lead evaporate and to have it all go to hell on the very end there, the Hawks tied it up a couple of times but didn't take the lead until the very end. So, I mean, this was a choke for all chokes. You know, I don't know how else to describe it. They had the lead. They were in control of the game. I can't, in the fourth quarter, how many times did Derek White in the fourth quarter hit a three-pointer that you're like, all right, that's it, game's over. White just killed it, that's it. Now it's a seven-point lead. It was tied. He hit a three. They were up one. He hit one to make it four. Two-possession game. I kept watching that going, number one, why isn't Derek White taking every shot in this quarter? Because he can't miss. And number two, boy, he's really breaking that Hawk team's back with that one. And I'll give Atlanta credit. They were resilient. They're better without Trae Young. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're a sneaky, long, athletic team that can give a team like the Celtics problems. And they did. That first quarter was not great for the Celtics either. The Hawks were right there going back and forth. I think they had the lead after one. And the Celtics did what I think they expected to do, is go out to a big lead in the second and third quarters. And then they thought they could just coast after that. And they couldn't. Atlanta was right there with them. They kept hitting shots. Celtics defense, I thought, wasn't great. Even when it was a bad matchup, you know, you get a guy posting up, Dyson or Johnson, one of those guys, and it just seemed like the Celtics had no answer for it. So, again, listen, we're not here to tell you that the Celtics are in trouble, and there's been a lot of champions over the years who have won a championship, come back the next year, not looked as good coming out of the gate, and then ended up picking it up when they needed to and winning it. How many times did the Cavaliers with LeBron not finish first in the East? It was a bunch. You know, you saw that happen before. It's not the craziest thing in the world. So I'm not panicking yet, but in the early going here, I'm looking for things. I'm looking for things that are concerning, looking for things that they're doing well. There are things they're doing well. Not much of them last night, though. I thought one of the things that they've done well this year is pass the ball. And last night, I mean, a lot of lazy passes, a lot of hands in the passing lane that they just didn't try and avoid. I liked Quinn Snyder's strategy, which was similar to Steve Kerr, which was just, you know, double team Tatum without the ball.
Yep.
Bother him all night, blitz him all night, and it worked. Tatum had a bad game, and Jaylen Brown had a very good game, as did Derek White. They have guys who can make up for it when Brown or Tatum or anybody is shots not going down. But they're figuring out, and I don't know if this is something that every team's going to do, but any coach out there that doesn't at least early on try and blitz Jason Tatum is missing the boat, because it's working so far.
He hasn't reacted well to the blitz. He hasn't shot the ball well after we kind of put to bed. One of my concerns coming into the season was these shooting carryover from last postseason. Now, he hasn't been that bad, but he's not been nothing to see here move along in terms of his shooting. And then the basic one is the rebounding, though. Like, I heard Terp talk about this. I don't know anything about deep dives into analytics of NBA games, but I got to think, if the other team shoots the ball 24 more times than you do, mm-hmm. they got a really good chance to win that basketball
sure.
game, right? Because even if they don't shoot well, let's just say they shoot 30% overall. Doesn't that mean they hit eight more shots? And if those are only two, that's 16 points right there you yeah. gave them, just because they shot more. Volume.
Well, they shot more because they got 19 offensive rebounds.
No, that's
and
my
you
point.
Only got a few. I mean,
and
that's
you don't
it. Yeah.
want to. I just think that's energy, effort, attitude. It's all those things we talk about that could be an issue with a defending champion, could be an issue with a team that is finding its way still as it develops into the front runner, whether the target is on their back or between their eyes, that whole mentality coming into the season, and Joe Mazzulla. And I think he's got some work to do. because they do have a vibe to them that they think they can just show up. And my guess is every game they get teased a little bit. They go up 15. Yeah, we can just show up. See, we're fine now.
Right.
Now we can just cruise to victory. Oh, wait, we're not just going to cruise to victory? Oh, we're in a dogfight here and plays matter at the end of games? So I just that's my simple takeaway. They are not – I thought they were hungry to be special, to put themselves maybe atop. You had talked about it. Is this the greatest Celtics team of all time? I'm going to say right now, nope.
Yeah,
it's not.
No, too. I mean, listen, that's a big standard here. The Celtics are one of the all-time great franchises in the history of sports. So, I mean, it's hard to be the top one there. But I agree. I mean, I think that this was – there's a special team in the East right now. It's not you. The special team in the East right now is Cleveland. It just is.
I'm not sure they're special either.
Well, maybe they won't end up being special.
They're playing special.
Right now, they're a special team. Yeah, they are. I mean, they're 12-0. I don't know who they have tonight. Philadelphia, I think, without Embiid. No Embiid. So probably going to go to 13-0. They're undefeated. The Celtics are struggling a little bit here. And a loss to the Hawks, I'm sorry, that counts. That counts as struggling a little bit. You lost to Golden State, which was the big game you circled.
Yep.
And now here it is, the first game of the NBA Cup, which I also don't care about. But you go out there and lose to Atlanta? I don't know about that. I mean, that's to me is the type of thing that should get people's attention. And I think it will, and I think the Celtics will bounce back from it, and I'm not concerned that this is going to derail their quest to repeat or anything. I still have them as the champions this year. But it's worth noting that, you know, for a team that's got the big bullseye on their back, they're getting hit with it a couple times, you know? Like, that's the trade-off.
And I would also argue for a team who some people still want to take pot shots at their title run due to the nature of it and the fact that teams weren't necessarily at full strength against them, this probably fuels some of those people.
Mm-hmm.
This probably fuels some people that still have questions about really how good are the Celtics.
Right.
They won. They were anointed. People like you have deemed them winners because they won.
Sure.
Are they really winners? Are they really that good? Is their mettle really that proven? Or did they have kind of a fortuitous run towards a title?
They did. I think both can be true. I mean, you can have a fortuitous run and still blow everybody out and cruise the moonwalk to the championship.
But then if you start the next year kind of half-assing it, not mm-hmm. looking your best, and I know
there hasn't been a repeat in 7 years, Andy. I mean, this is because it's hard the way to do. It is now. Yeah,
it is really hard to do. Look at the NFL; like you learn it all the time. It takes special to win a series of titles. Generally, like we've seen two of them in the last whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it's Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. It's two of the greatest of all time with coaches. Some of that. The Celtics are a champion. No one can take that away. They established. What they going to say now? Well, what they going to say now is, how come you guys get three losses to start the season? I explained away Indiana. You know, that's a tough matchup for them. They gave you a dogfight, whatever, on the road. Okay, so do I explain away Golden State? Well, you know, Steph Curry's still got something to him, blah, blah, blah. Maybe you overthought. How do I explain away this one?
Right.
I feel like at some point we stop explaining them away and say, you're not as good as we thought you were.
Yeah. Listen, and we'll see if that ends up being the case. I think that there are a lot of examples of teams, even Golden State, after that 73-win season, you know, where they got off to good starts, but then after that, not so much, you know? Like, there mm-hmm. were other teams that emerged in the West. It's a little early, I think, in the Celtics dynasty, if we're still considering this to be the early moments of one, for that to happen. So, something to keep an eye on. I think it's definitely not the be-all, end-all yet, but that was a surprising loss last night and a very poor start to the NBA Cup. Now, why do you hate the NBA Cup so much?
Because it's stupid. All you've done
why does it bother you? Like, who cares?
No, it doesn't bother me except when people like Jones try to tell me I should care. It is different. It has value. It's a money grab. The biggest thing is, whatever you said, the Emirates or whatever put their big name on it. I think that they changed it to a cup. It went from an in-season tournament to a cup.
Mm-hmm.
So we're appealing, I guess, to a global audience.
Well,
maybe we're trying to bamboozle
the NBA,
people.
It already appeals to a global audience.
We're trying to bamboozle people into thinking, hey, you know, you do this in soccer. So there's the CONCACAF Cup or whatever is down in South America, Central America. Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying to pull over that mentality. But for just average American sports fan, you were going to play Celtics-Hawks on a Tuesday night at Boston no matter what. You put all these fancy courts on it, and we got cups all over. Now, like, the key and the whole thing, I can see the cup all over the court.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of green. I think it was Drew Holiday or Derek White said in his post-game interview. But
could have been a little greener, I think, you know? Like, you thought about really turning up the green, guys. Like, that was all right.
And I don't hate the court, actually.
Mm.
Actually, the thing I may like best about the cup is that it gives me, like, an alternate uniform, an alternate court that I get to see, and it changes something
I kept forgetting
up.
The game was in Boston. I know it was a big green court, but like it wasn't their court. So I kept like, they'd say like,
the Hawks went with a green court.
Well, no, I just thought it was at a neutral site or something. Cause then they kept going like Scal or one of them would be like, oh, and that really quieted the crowd. And I was like, oh, right. Yeah, it's Celtics crowd. It's just, I kept forgetting that. I know it's green. I shouldn't have, but it's not their court. So I just assumed it was somewhere else.
And by the way,
NCAA or something.
If you wanted to do that and fly everybody over to Saudi Arabia on the Emirates airline or whatever the hell and have it on a neutral court over there and make it a real, like spectacle, a real thing, something that makes it more than just Celtics, Hawks in Boston, and then whoever else they play. Oh, there's these four Eastern teams, and you're going to play them in pool play, and no one cares. These are just games. Yeah, there's one extra game. For the bottom of the roster, I know Terp thinks it is valuable to some of these guys at the bottom of the roster. They can make a little extra money. Okay, you can play an extra game, which I don't think you really want to play an extra game. The NBA is all about load management. We're adding a game where some guy could blow an ACL or you could lose, you know, a guy that could actually impact the real title, the real championship run. And I don't hate it. It's more the people that tell me I should embrace it, that it has value. It does not. You just changed a game's name. You put a different label on a game. You slapped it on there.
Mm-hmm.
And even Missoula's like, well, not really. You know, if we made it separate from the schedule, then it would be something different.
Right.
But it is.
Because the Celtics are a team that shouldn't care about this. It's not for them. It's for the teams that maybe aren't going to be playoff teams or low-level playoff team, play-in tournament type of teams, that type of thing.
But so and why do they – okay, that theory.
That's my theory. I don't know if that's actually why, but that's what I think they did this
So time. Doesn't that tell you it doesn't really have value? Because the better teams, you think, the lesser teams have a chance to pursue it with extra effort or something.
It's something for the fans of the lesser teams to get excited about. I guess that's really what it is.
And,
you know, you make more money so the players care. But as far as, you know, the Atlanta Hawks go on a run and end up winning the in-season tournament, that's going to energize Atlanta Hawks fans for at least another month or so into the season before they realize, oh, yeah, it's the Hawks and they stink and who cares. So, you know, like, I think it's just that. It's just the early season kind of boost to get fans more interested in dead-end teams. And the Celtics aren't a dead-end team. So people around here don't really give a crap.
But if that happens, I actually think that tells you the value of it, because if dead-end teams win it, it means the real-end teams, the life-end teams, don't really care. They're not playing to win it. Nor should they be, in my opinion. You're playing to win a real championship, not some cup.
By the way, Al Horford out tonight against Brooklyn. That was announced about an hour ago. He's got a sprained toe.
It's also back-to-back games.
It is back-to-back games. So that's probably what you're going to be seeing here.
A strained toe.
Still out already.
A
sprained toe, not a
strained toe. Is that a pinky toe?
No, it's the big toe.
Oh!
Got the big toe.
Shouldn't laugh at that. Turf toe, they say, is the most painful injury on the planet, if that's turf toe. But I don't know if you can get turf toe on a court.
It's the most painful injury on the planet?
No.
My thoughts exactly.
listen to people that have had it. I thought that, too. People who've had it say it's the most painful injury. I think Deion is a big advocate. Deion Sanders. I think it ended his career.
Really?
I believe so.
Didn't he have like a toe amputated or something?
He almost had his foot amputated. I don't think he did. He's got circulation.
Was that because of turf toe? Was it circulation?
I don't know if it dates back to the turf toe, but I know turf toe pretty much ended his career, and people say it is one of the more painful injuries.
Well, if you ask Mac Jones, a sprained ankle is the most painful injury in the history of the world.
Still catching strays.
As you could tell from getting carried
off. Thousands of miles away.
My friend's father was a carpenter, and one time a nail gun, he got a nail shot into his head, and he just pulled the nail right out.
Jesus.
And back when men were men.
That was back when men were men, and I think that was probably more painful than turf toe.
He was also in Billy Madison. I mean, Happy Gilmore, sorry.
Either way, no
he
Al Horford
He shot himself
tonight.
In the head with a nail gun?
He didn't shoot himself. Someone else, it went off and the gun got stuck like in the back of his head.
Or were they effing around?
I don't think so.
I used to do construction. People would eff around with those because you could pull back the safety and fire nails all over the job site. Mm-hmm. We used to shoot turtles from up above. I mean, frogs from up above. There was a pond near a job site. We would shoot at
Sounds like something a serial killer would
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah,
alarming.
We used to torture frogs with a nail gun.
I don't think we actually hit them because it was like, you know, 25 yards away.
But we tried.
Well, you know. All right, move along.
Yeah, sure, why not? What did you think about Jaylen Brown not playing for the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter?
I thought some of the rotations in general were a little bit weird, and I know, and we can talk to Scal about it at 4 o'clock. He was saying that Missoula is trying some new rotations and trying some different things. I don't love it. I feel like we've done this now multiple times, like, hey, how come your good players aren't playing in a game that you're competitive? It's a dogfight. Like, what are we doing here? I don't know if this is long-term, if he's building something long-term, but I did not care for it. And it's funny because the game
checked in at 7:06, so the first 5 minutes of that fourth quarter where it was a one-score game.
Now,
and he was killing it. Now, actually, at that point, coming into the fourth quarter, they were up like 7, right? I think they were up 7 points. Yeah, 91-84 was the score after three quarters. So it wasn't like a big lead, but it was a little bit of a cushion. He subbed out to start the quarter because he played most of the third and had a great third quarter. And at that point, he had like 26 points and was your leading scorer, your best player, him and Derek White. And 5 minutes, you sit him out 5 minutes in the fourth?
Now, he did play 36 minutes coming off an injury, like he's building back up.
I guess, yeah.
And we did get the report. We finally got that he did this in camp, but it wasn't really a specific injury. Mm-hmm. It's something that he feels like he's going to have to manage the rest of the year. So is that a guy that coming off an extended absence, second game back on the court, first of back-to-backs, do you really want to be? So if you said he missed the first 5 minutes. Is that what it was?
Yeah, he didn't check until 7:06.
So if he had, he could have played 40-something minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want that coming off an
injury. No, but then maybe you do the rotations differently.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to have him miss so much of the fourth quarter. That's what I would. I mean,
fair.
You know, in general, I think you don't know if he's going to go off for a game like that, but he was playing well. And coming off an injury or not, I feel like you can manage that a little bit better. I don't know. I just that happened the other night, too. I forget who it was. Tatum, I think, was having that great game, and then he didn't play in the fourth quarter. Was that the Golden State game?
Early in the Golden State game, I feel like Tatum missed like the first 5-6 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Some of these rotations are a little weird. Again, he's probably taking a long-term approach. He's trying to figure things out, and he should be. This does not affect, as much as I bitch about their record and they don't want to be special and they're not motivated, this doesn't change my belief that they're going to win the title, you know, barring injury.
Same here. I still think they'll repeat. I don't think this hurts their chances of repeating.
I'm just not seeing what I expected to see to start the year. As somebody in the Twitch chat said, they've lost 3 games since you said they wouldn't lose till December.
That's a good point. 617-779-7937. We'll discuss this more with Brian Scalabrine when he joins the show at 4 o'clock. We'll also be joined by Adam Schefter. Get some inside NFL talk going with him. That's at 3:45. In the meantime, here is Stiz with what's trending. And when we come back, we'll get to your phone calls and we'll see what the problem is focus-wise with this Celtics team. Derek White, not happy with the way this team has been starting lately. We'll get to that next.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Derek White, who I don't have a lot of criticism for. I thought he was excellent last night. Probably the best Celtic on the floor, I would say. Him and Jaylen Brown, although Brown did have those free throws at the end, which, I mean, listen, you know, 6 out of 10 from the free throw line isn't a big deal unless you lose by 1 point. And that's what they did, and that's the difference right there. So, obviously, Jason Tatum had a bad night shooting. Al Horford and Jrue Holiday offensively didn't really contribute all that much, although Holiday had a bunch of assists. I think, in general, that was the type of game where you maybe expected the bench to step up a little bit more. You didn't get much out of them. Hauser and Pritchard were it. I was expecting Kater to play a little more in the second half after that block he had in the first. He seemed like a good energy guy. He seemed like someone who could maybe battle against the Hawks in their length, which I was impressed by the way. The Hawks are a plucky little team there. And without Trae Young, I think they're much better. Frenchie, I thought, had a decent game. Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels, who I have to admit, I at times couldn't tell who was who just from when it was all the way bad. They're like the same height, same complexion, same haircut. I'm like, who has the ball right now? And Daniels, who came over in the DeJounte Murray trade, looks like a real player for them. I mean, he looks like someone who can be a difference maker for them on a nightly basis. The 6 steals were wild. I mean, that was not what I was expecting to see. I wasn't expecting to see the Celtics turn it over so much, and I really am not happy with what I'm seeing on the glass. And that's the main takeaway I have here, is that that's not just something that's isolated to this game. That's something that's been going on with this team basically all season. They've been getting beat on the glass by inferior teams. They're getting outworked on the glass. And that's the type of thing, I'm sorry, I'm going to put on the players partially, but also on Joe Mazzulla. You're going to be this hard ass who gets everybody all, you know, riled up and licking blood off the floor and everything. Well, okay, get them in there and get them rebounding, because they're not doing it right now.
We had a texter, and I can't actually find it now, but somebody wondering, actually, the 508, why isn't Tillman playing? Isn't he a
good call. He didn't play at all last night, yeah.
And Kata is a guy that we've seen kind of his hype has built a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure last night was one of his better games necessarily. Do you think that could be a possibility?
I suppose. I think so. I mean,
like with Horford out, he might get some minutes tonight just because.
Yeah, and Tillman's not great or anything, but he is a big body and
neither
he can
Kata.
Push guys around. And yeah, I'm a little surprised he didn't play at all. And Kata got like 20 minutes. So maybe they're just working that out, you know, seeing what they have and giving guys different amounts of time. Tillman was more of a contributor, it seems like, in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Than he has been so far to start this year. So maybe he's fallen out of favor. Maybe he's not, jump shot's not falling. I couldn't tell you. But I do think that this rebounding thing is a problem right now and something that they need to work on. There's not a lot for this team to work on. That's something to work on.
Well, and I also think there is a little bit of a mentality that teams are going to play physical defense on you and they're going to out-rebound right. on you. That's where you get back to what was you're soft. Like, teams feel like you're skilled. I think every team that comes in knows mm-hmm. they're probably more skilled than us. But is there a way we can kind of punch them in the mouth, figuratively, to take them a little bit out of their game? Because you still kind of outskilled them, right? You outshot them by yep. tiny percentage
points. You shot 40% from three. It wasn't right. a bad game, yeah.
Yeah. Usually, in past years, if you looked at Celtics' losses, the first thing you looked at was the three-point shooting percentage.
Right.
And it would be down in, like, the 20s. And you're like, oh, that's what happened. Then the next thing you go to is turnovers. Now, they did have 20 turnovers
yeah.
in this game, which I forget the number a couple years ago. It was, like, 16. If you turn it over 16 times as the Celtics, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it there. But I think some of it is, right now, they're a little bit mentally and physically soft. And I think that's what Derek White was talking about there. Like, we're a little bit soft right now. We're not the bully on the court, and they have the ability, talent-wise, to be the bully.
Yeah.
To blow people off the court, out the building. Right now, they're not doing that, and I think they're getting their own way. And this is one of those cliche things we talked about when we were being snobby, spoiled Boston sport. What can derail the Celtics? Well, it's only themselves. It's their own motivations or desire.
They beat the Hawks by 30 points 2 weeks ago.
Right.
They walked into this thinking we're going to beat them by 30 points again. They did that in Atlanta. Trae Young was playing, so maybe that was the big difference. But, like, you know that they took this team lightly.
Absolutely.
You could see it from the beginning of
Wait,
the game.
Wait, they weren't fired up for the cup?
No. No, they were not. because it's the cup. Didn't matter to them. 617-779-7937. David's in the car with a thought on the Celtics. Go ahead, David. You lead us off.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you, as always. So I agree with Andy. I think the cup is stupid. I think it's a really stupid thing to do. It makes no sense in the middle of the season. If you want to have a cup, you do it after, you know, off season. You know, you do a whole separate thing. Get teams involved, whatever that be. But anyway, my point on the Celtics, you know, I think we need to be concerned. I think in the beginning, after last year, I think we're too quick to say, when this year started, let's give them the trophy now, so to speak. And I think this team is, you know, they're going to struggle because they are soft. And I think for the simple reason that they won last year without Marcus Smart, I think the mentality on the players and the fans is that, you know, you didn't need him. He was the reason they didn't win before. And I don't think that was the case. And you're missing that on a team still. You don't have a guy like Marcus Smart on a team who's going to be vocal, who's going to bark, and who's going to make noise.
David,
he's going to be a leader.
They don't have Marcus Smart on the team. Thank God. All right? Thank God they don't have Marcus Smart on the team anymore. You know what they used to do when Marcus, you know what other teams used to do when Marcus Smart was on the team? They'd double team everyone except Marcus Smart, and he'd be wide open for a three. They'd have to kick it out to him, and he'd miss it every time, which now Jason Tatum's also doing. But that was the Marcus Smart special for years. And his leadership, I'm sorry. Do you think that he was a great, like, did he ever seem like he was such a positive influence on Jason Brown and Jason Tatum, not the other way around there. Did it ever seem like that relationship was so great that if they had traded him away, it would just completely ruin those guys? They traded him away to get Porzingis, by the way. And that has been one of the best things that's happened to the team. I mean, yeah. I think moving on from him, replacing him with someone who can actually shoot and bring something more to the table than winning plays or whatever it was with Marcus Smart, I thought that was really what allowed this team to become great. I think that, you know, they were getting held back by Marcus Smart. Now, a player like him, a tough-nosed kind of guy, like, fine. Drew Holiday's that already. Drew Holiday is a tough-nosed guy. He's won before. He can shoot at the end of games. He's a much better version of Marcus Smart. And that's on the court. I'd say off the court, too. He's not the type of leader who needs to make everything about himself. He's perfectly fine stepping back and being a role player. Marcus Smart never was.
See, but I think what David was going for there is, who's the dog? Who's the a-hole? Who's the guy that's going to KG it or whatever, whoever you think the leader on various teams are to call people out? Something we talked about with Drake May, the evolution of a leader is being able to call people out. I think that's Jaylen Brown. I think Jaylen Brown is the closest thing you have to a guy that'll kind of bark at a teammate or say something that a teammate doesn't necessarily want to hear. I don't know if Drew Holiday has that. I don't know that I've really seen that from Drew Holiday.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not in terms of getting in people's faces or whatever, but in terms of hard-nosed play and the actual play on the court, he's a better version of Marcus Smart.
Oh, he's way better than Marcus Smart. But I'm talking about, I go back to Ime. Ime did it from a coaching perspective. Mm-hmm. He called the team out. You got punked on your own floor. Do they have a coach or a player right now that would say that?
I think that's something Mazzulla would say, or he'd say it in his own kind of way. Like, he may not say you got punked, but he'd give some weird, you know, Bible quote or Sun Tzu or something, and, like, you know, let you know that he's not happy about it.
But does that work all the time?
Well, it worked last year. You know, that's sort of the point. Like, having a guy like Marcus Smart is fine, but then when you win without him, it doesn't really seem like you needed that. And I don't think Jaylen Brown filled that void. I don't think anybody filled that void. I think he just left and the team functioned a little better. And yeah, sure, having KG or someone to hold everyone accountable and get in their face, that's a nice thing in theory. But if it's not, it wasn't helping them at all. It wasn't helping them achieve what they needed to achieve when Marcus Smart was here.
No, I
guess.
But the issue is, this is a different season with a different team, with a different
Different. It's basically the same team.
No. But you're the leader now. Right. You're not chasing. You have nothing to prove. You have nothing to prove. How do I know that? Your star player said, what they gonna say now? So he thinks they're on top of the world. He thinks they took away anything people can criticize and say about them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, if a coach says you got punked on your home court, everybody knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
If a coach says Sun Tzu once said that the sun only rises on a dog's butt three times a year, mm-hmm. players are like, what did coach just say? Is he saying we're a dog's ass? Is he saying we're the sun? You know what I mean?
Did he just compare us all to orca whales?
Right. I feel like sometimes you need the very simple, stop being a jackass.
Yeah.
You know, or you're playing like crap, or you guys aren't as good as you think you are. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm. I would say quite simple. You guys aren't as good as you think you are right now. You're not playing up to what you can be. You can be a great team. Right now, you're playing down to the opposition way too often instead of up to your unique abilities as a group. And I don't know if Mazzulla has said that, and I don't know if other players are willing to say that, other than maybe Brown. And a little caveat there is he's been out for basically half the season, almost half the season so far. That's a little bit of a thing there. And we'll always get back to this. Your best player, Jason Tatum. His leadership skills are interesting.
Yeah.
Are not necessarily...
He's soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, and I want to be careful here, because people already think I rip Jason Tatum too much.
I mean, you do. But
yeah, I do. There was a guy last night, he tweeted at me in the fourth quarter, God, I hope the Celtics pull this out so I don't have to hear Hart rip on Tatum again tomorrow on the show. I was like, yeah. Hey, thanks.
And then they lost, and Hart had this big Grinch smile, even though it was Brown who missed the shot at the end of the game, by the way.
I actually replied to the guy and goes, I said, it's hard to rip JT JT's missing two free throws at the end of the game to lose the game.
And what would have been the game winner, too, yes.
I like that shot.
And Tatum's three that was in and out. I mean, it was literally in the hoop and bounced out. But
doesn't count.
Doesn't count. And
somebody like you who lives by the scoreboard between winners and losers, that was a loser shot.
It was. It was a loser shot. He missed. And so was Jaylen Brown's at the end of the game.
A few times.
A couple of times there. Loser free throws and then that mid-range jumper, which I like the look, too. It was a good play call. And he got the ball on the spot. I wanted to see another replay of that play right before then, because they didn't really show it. They're like, oh, yeah, Brown deflected it, and it's Celtics ball. And I was like, can we see it? Like, what happened there? And
I didn't
like,
really buy it.
Nah.
I'm the biggest JB guy and Celtics guy watching, but I watched that, and you're right. We never really got a close-up. Mm-mm. They kind of came together, pointed this way, and I was like...
And that was that.
I'll take it.
Okay, I mean, great.
I'll take it. I'm not sure it... Even physically, I was like, how did he knock the ball away? But somehow, I mean, I know you get those.
No idea. There wasn't a major protest by Snyder or anybody on the Hawks, so I guess maybe we
I mean, he kind of marched up and down a little, but like almost didn't know what to say or how to... I think you wanted to be careful. You obviously don't want to get a technical in that situation.
No, definitely not.
Change the whole game.
It was that was a weird one, though. Anyway, it didn't matter. 617-779-7937. Jen McCaffrey has an update on the Red Sox or a take on the Red Sox that is more in line with mine than with yours. I'm not sure why you're applauding there, but we'll get to your latest Red Sox news right after this. It's Craig Breslow with Rob Bradford on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast.
Jackass.
Who?
Him.
Breslow?
He makes it hard for people like me that want to support him, want to believe him. We're preparing to be more aggressive, but we can't. No, you can guarantee you'll be more aggressive. You can't guarantee you're going to get Soto or you're going to get Sasaki or anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can guarantee you're more aggressive.
Right.
But why do we need the words? There's one word needed.
He's so close to getting it. You're so close to getting it, Andy.
No,
And yet you keep lapping up this crap from the Red Sox. Unbelievable. You're so close to getting it. And yet you're still, they're getting Soto. Oh, yeah, they're going to spend. Oh, yeah. Let me put on my pink hat. Like, come on.
They allow you to do your thing. And that's what pisses me off.
What are you talking? Of course they do.
Just
that's what
they
do.
We're going to be more aggressive. Yes, next question.
Right, but they don't. Jen McCaffrey wrote this in The Athletic, talking about the Red Sox and their pursuit of both Soto and Sasaki. She says, even if the Red Sox intend to return to the top of the market this winter, their lackluster performances and lower payrolls over the last 5 years have undoubtedly made them long shots to land two of the top players this winter, Roky Sasaki and Juan Soto. In other words, their past actions or inactions are likely to have current consequences. And she's right about that. And it's not just, oh, look what they've done in the past. It's how they've built the team and what the team is right now and how attractive it is to these potential free agents. That's what it's about. That's the thing. You're not going to – I don't think the Red Sox are prepared to offer any of the free agents out there life-changing, oh, my God, way better offer than anybody else is giving them. I just don't think they have that in them. I don't think that's part of their business plan. I think they're going to make competitive offers and hope that whoever's out there says it and says, yeah, you know, I'd love to come to the Red Sox. I keep seeing this video floating around Twitter of Soto a couple years ago being like, yeah, when I was a kid, I really loved the Red Sox. And I'm sure John Henry saw that and was like, cha-ching. Like, that means I can save some money on this contract. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. You can't save money. You're not going to be able to do that. That's not the way it works anymore. It never really worked like that. You have to pay more. And the Red Sox, when they were winning championships and in the mix for that, at the very least could say, hey, we can't give you top dollar. We can't give you the most amount, but we can guarantee you this. You'll be competitive. You'll be playing in the ALCS or something close to that. We'll be a playoff team, and you'll have a chance to compete for a World Series. And that was something they could guarantee, that you could at least compete for it. And it wasn't always true, but you know, every 5 years or so, there they are back in the World Series. And this time around, they do not have that.
So
they don't have that ability to guarantee that.
I agree with what Jen writes in the Sasaki situation. I think very much so, because that's a very weird situation where he's gonna not make as much money as he could and pick fit and comfort and all of those things. With Soto, I think you're gonna have to pay. I think you're gonna have to be the top dollar. Now, you could argue you could be top dollar and still get turned down, you know, $610 million versus $607. And he's like, $607 is close enough. I'll go wherever. Yankees, Mets, someplace where I know they're all in.
Right.
I think for Soto, you're going to have to spend. I also think historically when the Red Sox were signing people, they spent. They lured people like David Price and Carl Crawford and Manny. And these guys came here. Why? Because the number was biggest in Boston. And I think sometimes we romanticized some of the additions, like, oh, they want to play here. Yeah, they want to play here because they were paid. And a lot of them didn't work, actually.
True.
You could say Crawford and Price and Renteria. And
Adrian Gonzalez, a bunch of guys.
Some guys took the money and I think regretted it later, taking the money. But a lot of guys came here the same way Matt Judon came to the Patriots. I didn't choose them. They chose me. They paid me. I said yes to the money. I think that's what's going to happen with Soto. So I think Red Sox control that. I agree the fact that the recent malaise or whatever word she used and others want to use about the Bloom, Breslow, John Henry cheapness era. It's kind of like the Eras Tour, the cheapness era here in Boston. That, I think, affects some of the other deals. Because Montgomery. Remember Montgomery? Was Montgomery the one who's... Was he the one whose wife was like working at BU, or who was the pitcher that everybody assumed they were going to get because the wife was at BU or something?
That sounds right, but I'm not positive.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who it was, but it didn't work. Why? Because that's not really how the world works.
Right.
The world works, you put a number down. If the number's bigger than the other team's, then they'll take it. If not, then they have to weigh other stuff if there are, you know, three offers
right.
that are the same.
And Soto's probably exactly right. And I think that's going to be the difference here. Do the Red Sox, are they going to be willing to go into these negotiations with Soto? And I know they might have already had them, or they're on their way to have them, or whatever.
And that could happen fast, somebody reported.
Sure.
Somebody said before December 1st or something.
Okay. I mean, that's, what, 3 weeks, a little bit? So, sure. And we'll see. And we'll see what they actually end up doing. But do you have any confidence that John Henry or Sam Kennedy or whoever they send into this thing is going to put an offer on the table that's going to blow the Yankees and the Mets away? I don't see it. I do not see it. Steve Cohen has proven that he'll go out and make those type of deals.
Yep.
The Yankees have proven that they'll make those type of deals. It's not the old man anymore, but the kids, even though they spend less than the big George used to, they'll still spend. Ask Aaron Judge. Ask Stanton. Ask a lot of guys, you know, who they've paid. Garrett Cole. They have big contracts out there. The Red Sox really only have one. The Red Sox really only, they've streamlined it down to Rafael Devers, maybe Trevor Story a little bit, and Giolito. Those are your top contracts, and half of those guys don't even play. So it's like, you know, this makes them less likely to want to go out and sign those big contracts. And when it comes to Cohen, and it comes to the Steinbrenners, and it comes to whoever in San Diego, whose name escapes me at the moment, I know Soto's probably not going back there, but those are the type of teams that are in these negotiations that you're going up against, and they've proven that they'll do it. You haven't.
And so you say they look at like Story, or they look at Devers even, and maybe say, are we really getting $313 million out of him? Why don't they look the other way? Why don't they look at the World Series? Why don't they look at the Dodgers? Do they regret Ohtani? They might later. But do they regret Ohtani right now? No.
Definitely not.
Do they regret Teoscar Hernandez? Do they regret Mookie Betts? Do the Yankees regret Judge? Do the Yankees regret trading for Soto? No, I don't think they do. It's like, why don't they look at it that way? So it's not the issue of how you do business.
Mm-hmm.
It's the issue of who you do business with. Maybe you just had bad baseball people making bad decisions, or ownership forcing baseball people into bad decisions for a portion of this era, right? Like, there's plenty of teams that are spending right now. The World Series was the best example.
Yep.
Five MVPs, five former MVPs, first time in history.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like money well spent. They were playing later than anybody, and one of them hoisted a big old medal trophy.
Yep.
Right?
Sure.
So why don't they look at that and maybe
three
question
of them did, but yeah.
Yeah. Maybe question who you do, not how you do, right? Like who you're allocating your money to. And I also, the other thing that annoys me is they almost do some of the Patriots Belichickian, like, well, if we only spend 2 years and whatever, $40 million on
right.
Giolito, no, you wasted a $20 million pay slot.
Yep.
Like, it's somehow buried because it's not a 10-year, $200 million, but you still wasted $20 million of payroll for this year's baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that less wasteful? To me, it's not.
It's not.
It's almost more wasteful because it was predictable.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And Giolito, by the way, wasn't good last year.
Right.
2 years ago either.
He
was
a bottom
starter. So like
people were hitting bombs off him.
Yeah. And that was your big jewel of the offseason last year. So
Trevor
listen.
Story, they did the same thing.
Yeah.
Remember when John Henry's like, wait, you don't consider Trevor Story a big contract? No.
Not
in 2022, 3, and 4? Not really.
No.
It's a mediocre run-of-the-mill contract.
Yeah, middle of the road on the high side, maybe, and it looks worse now because he doesn't play very much. So yeah, fine. But that doesn't let you off the hook.
No.
And that doesn't mean you should stop spending, and that doesn't mean that going after these high-ticket free agents on a team that could really use some of them in certain places, maybe not even in the outfield, but starting pitching, all sorts of things. There's plenty of holes in this roster, and I just feel like they're going to go into it like they've gone into the last three. And, you know, maybe that means I'm cynical. Maybe it means I'm not just lapping up the bullcrap they keep. I'm sure you loved Full Throttle last year, too, didn't you?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So how'd that go?
Not great.
Right. So why are you – I don't understand why you're
Throttle
coming back
was
for
jammed.
More.
They
why
couldn't.
Are you coming back for more this year is what I don't
understand. Because I believe the manager, I believe the relationship with the manager
it's
has –
not the manager's calling.
With the general manager, and I believe they have a feeling that I would love to fully support, but every time he speaks, he says something that makes it hard to support him.
Yes.
Yes,
you're right
but
about
we can't
that.
Guarantee – yes, you can guarantee you're more aggressive. You absolutely can guarantee you're more – that's like any coach saying we can't guarantee we're going to be more – yes, You can coach more aggressively. You can say we're gonna press in basketball, press and run the floor. In football, we're gonna blitz the hell out of you. You may toast us. I can't guarantee it'll work, but I can guarantee we're gonna be more aggressive. Why would he say that?
I don't know.
Because he's pussyfooting through the offseason, and that's what allows people like you to act the way you do.
Yeah, reality. That's what allows it. 617-779-7937. The Patriots had Gerard Mayo and Drake May speak to the media today. We got some injury updates, and we'll get to how that may impact the rest of the season next.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.